if you're creating a plan, take all the time you need for this one, and that's reflect and understand that what happened wasn't your fault.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Life, a podcast brought to you by LifePath. Donation can be a complicated subject, but it is really all about life. Spend a few minutes as we unravel the complexities of donation. Let's talk about life.
There are so many observances during the month that many get overlooked or ignored. But as we continue to move through the month of September, we must stop and learn more about the importance of suicide prevention. This is the time to raise awareness of this urgently significant growing crisis. The purpose of this observation is to shift public perception, spread hope, and share vital information so people understand what this topic is about. The goal is to ensure that individuals, friends, and families have access to the resources they need to discuss suicide prevention and seek help. Hi, you're listening to episode 157 of Let's Talk About Life. I'm your host, Colleen Gerber, kidney recipient and LifeBank staff member. Sadly, suicide affects more Ohioans than we may think. In 2021, suicide was the second leading cause of death among Ohioans ages 10 to age 34, and the 12th leading cause of death in Ohio overall. From 2020 to 2021, the number of suicide deaths increased 8%. And the rate of suicide death increased 7% to 14.8 deaths per 100,000 Ohioans. In the same period, white non-Hispanic males and females had the largest increase in this rate of suicide. In 2021, adults 25 to 44 years of age had the highest rate of suicide, which increased 13% from 2020. Compared with 5% increase among other reported age groups. Among males, those 75 years and older had the highest rate of suicide in 2021. And among females at the same time, those 45 to 54 years old had the highest number and rate of suicide. Clearly, additional education can help each one of us to be more aware on this issue and how it affects the lives of those left behind after a completed suicide. We are so fortunate to have two guests who can speak on this subject expertly. Our first guest is Jack Stranero, whose dad, John, completed suicide when Jack was a boy. Jack will share his story and how he has learned to live in a way that honors his dad and his dad's memory. Our second guest is my colleague, Alyssa Berman, LifeBank Bereavement Services Manager, who has led several support groups surrounding loss from suicide and is a counselor to survivors, including Jack. I want to thank you both profoundly for being here to discuss this really sensitive topic and being so open, Jack, with your story and Alyssa with your knowledge. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Hey, Colleen, thank you for letting me on your program.
Jack, can you tell us a little bit about your dad from your perspective as you look back when you were 11?
Yeah, I'm excited to share my story here. My dad, John Stranero, was a beloved guy. I was lucky enough to have 11 years with him, and he was a big part of my life growing up. And I just remember him being very friendly in the way how he saw the good in everyone he met. He was caring in the way that he coached me and my two older sisters in all of our different sports teams. And I would say that's what most members of our community remember my dad for, Coach Stranero, and his philosophy on defense winning championships. You know, he was very passionate about the things he cared about. Sports and the value of a dollar was one. He'd always take us to Little Italy to celebrate the feast and our Italian heritage, all these things. He was just very present and appreciative of the moment. And I really took such pride being able to share his feelings. And I think that really contributed to learning empathy at a young age, which is really important to both my personal life and my career to this point. You know, my godfather once told me about my dad, because as I've gotten older, I've certainly asked more questions as I've gotten more mature myself, just sort of, you know, understanding what he really was like. And he said to me, he wasn't the absolute coolest dude, but he was such a nice guy. And looking back, I just see how his values shone through and how he treated others. And that's really shaped who I am today.
Aw, that's so heartwarming. Jack, if you're comfortable, would you be able to share with our listeners what happened the day he died, as you remember them?
Yeah, the date was December 12th, 2009. It was a cold, sunny Saturday morning, and I just recently turned 11 years old and was in fifth grade. I'm the youngest of three. My older sister's in eighth grade at the time, and the oldest was in high school. And looking back on things, we mostly stayed out of trouble. We got decent grades. We all stayed well-behaved. We all tried to make things pretty easy on my parents. My sisters would probably say I made things the hardest, but neither here nor there. But I'm very privileged to say that we grew up in a pretty stable household, but we were all very busy. And specifically, we all played sports year-round. Luckily, my mom was super supportive. You know, she grew up on an army base in the South and was a good swimmer in high school. And my dad, who was a decent football player growing up in high school, he also really embraced it. And his means of supporting all of our sporting seasons and events was he was the coach while my mom was doing all the loads of dirty laundry and so forth. And so today, I remember on the Saturday, we had a 3 or 4 o'clock basketball game at our home gym. So, and that was a walk away from our house. So I was absolutely pumped. And so like any 11-year-old boy on a Saturday morning, early afternoon, I spent the entirety of the morning playing video games in the basement. I remember it was a James Bond video game. The level I was playing, I was in this oil mining cave, just a random detail, but I definitely remember it. And I remember my mom calling me up for breakfast and handing me this bowl of scrambled eggs. I sat down and my dad opened the garage door leading into the kitchen, just coming back from one of his racquetball games or meeting up with one of his buddies to work out, said hi to my mom in the kitchen also at the time. And he walked by me saying, "Eggs are good. You should keep eating those." And I thought nothing of it, but those were actually the last words my dad ever said to me. Aww. And so I went to my room to read shortly after. And from down the hall, I just remember some commotion and a loud thud coming from my parents' bedroom shower. My mom was in the bedroom at the time. I believe she was folding laundry. And she must have thought that our dog, Casey, got into the bathroom while my dad was showering off at the time and maybe knocked something over. But there were no responses when she knocked on the door and hollered at my dad, who was in the shower. And so at this point, I heard a 911 call from my mom. And before I could even step out of my room or close my book, really, my mom came and shut my bedroom door. And about 5 minutes later, paramedics rushed in and out of my house. And my mom had already called our childhood friends to get me to, you know, pick me up and ship me over to their place for the afternoon. You know, again, I'm 11 years old, so I don't really know what's going on, but I know something's wrong. There's this just yeah. feeling that hey, you know, something is not in balance. And I'll never forget that on my way out of the house, being sort of let out by my mom and some of the paramedics, there was this little spot of blood that had gotten on our carpeted stairs. Wasn't sure what it was from at the time. Assumed it was from the paramedics getting my dad out of the house, but that was the moment that it just sort of switched in my head. Like something really bad had just happened. And no more than an hour later, my grandpa picked me and my sisters up from our family friend's house and greeting all of us at the hospital, me and my sisters. My mom said that daddy went to heaven. And looking at him one last time, it was conveyed to me that he had taken his own life a few hours earlier.
I can't even imagine. as an adult or as an 11-year-old, how you were feeling at that time. I mean, confusion must be at the top of the list.
You got it. I didn't understand it. Confusion is a good word for it. I think the other word was disbelief. Like there wasn't.
Yes.
There wasn't much anger, even sadness. I don't remember crying all that much that day or even really that weekend. I just remember we sort of had this impromptu open house where people came over and said their condolences and dropped off food and goodies and whatnot. And that was my first time getting sympathy. You know, like I said, we grew up pretty fortunate. And so people coming over to share how sorry they felt was a unique feeling. But I do remember getting a lot of really cool stories and hearing all the great things people had to say about my dad. But really, it didn't sink in. I didn't understand what had happened until the funeral. And I just remember it was the Thursday afterwards. So a little bit less than a week, and just seeing the line of cars to get into the parking lot and walking up that aisle behind our dad, who was in a little cremation box. I'm not sure the exact word, but I remember how loud the music was being played in that church, just to cut through all the people and commotion. And I just remember all the people there to honor him and show support for us in the community, because, you know, it wasn't just that, you know, we'd lost our dad and my mom had lost her husband, but the community just lost someone, right? Like this was a coach. This was someone that people knew, and, you know, and everyone felt like they were owed one more conversation, whether for me, it was him telling me to eat more eggs, or whether it was for him to talk about the Cleveland Browns or whatever it was. It, you know, everyone felt that they were owed one more interaction. And that afternoon, you know, everyone just came together, and that's when I realized, hey, he's gone. And that's what started to kick off that feeling of peace and understanding with what had happened.
Obviously, you didn't in the beginning understand. What was the thing that helped you understand the gravity of the situation? I mean, I know you realized Daddy was no longer there and he was in heaven, but what made you like grasp the entire circumstance?
Yeah. And kind of add on that thread too, like this was 2009. Mental health was not widely discussed at this time. It was not common to hear about suicide really in general, but it definitely wasn't common to hear about tragedies like a father of three taking their own life. So, you know, I, to your point, I didn't get it at first, but once that healing and once that healing process started, my mom was really the one who we all rallied behind, and really for a lot of members of the community, I feel like they rallied behind. You know, she put, you know, me and my sisters into family grief counseling, and that was really helpful for me just to understand my emotions and help deal with the loss and realize that healing does take time. Like you don't have the answers. And when you're 11, 12 years old, you definitely don't have the answers. And so even to this day, I still do plenty of therapy and work with career coaches and feel that my emotions can sometimes come out of nowhere. You know, maybe it's something that I talk about with Alyssa all the time, is sometimes you just have bad weeks or bad months and so forth. But, you know, you got to look out for yourself. And I think I also owe a lot to LifeBank for helping me understand what had happened and being at peace with how the events happened, because, you know, I'm sure we can get into it a little bit more, but my dad was an organ donor, and having such an incredible story to lean on as a kid, you know, hearing about my dad had saved people's eyesight. I think over 100 people had his tissues and muscle fibers and whatnot. I don't remember the exact details, but my mom had become a real champion for LifeBank since our dad's passing. And as an adult, hearing and, you know, maybe at some point I'll be able to see how his life has brought other folks' life in its own funny way. That's been just such a blessing. And I do owe LifeBank for that. And also for setting me up with Alyssa, my own therapist.
Well, for many families, and not just families of people who complete suicide, but other families whose loved one died in maybe a not so great way. It changes the story. It changes the end, because really the last thing on earth that they did wasn't that the tragic act. It is that they saved others or they helped others. I know for a lot of donor families, donation brings them much comfort and it gives them something to be so proud of their loved one.
Yeah.
Jack, you mentioned a couple of the times that you were 11, and lo and behold, next month you're going to be 26. could you talk about what the past 15 years have been like for you and how you've grown and stayed connected to your dad?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about this. I'd say I still remain very fortunate in terms of the community that I grew up with. I still am in very close contact with a lot of those folks that helped me through those tough years growing up. And I think the last 15, 16 years can really be characterized by just galvanization. My mom being able to inspire us to continue working hard, continue getting great grades. There are people out there who are here to support you, but no one's going to do the work for you. No one's really going to be successful except yourself. Like, it's up to you. And so that has always been one of the sources for my motor. Like, I'm a very high energy person, and I'm one that's going to get the job done. And I think my dad inspired part of that with me. You know, I understand that the way he went isn't the best of scenarios, but it's up to me to make him proud while he's still up there. And so, like, I'm likewise a very sentimental person. You know, I'm very passionate about a couple things, and will let people know about it. You know, for me, it's music, food, sports, clothes, these sorts of things. And so I've found that a very simple and highly effective way of staying connected to my dad is maybe just listening to one of his favorite albums or cooking, you know, one of his favorite spaghetti dinners the same way you would have liked it, or, you know, sometimes even emailing my mom when I'm working, spag for din, exactly how he would while he was working at National City Bank back in the day. But I just feel so blessed when I have those opportunities to listen to one of his, you know, favorite albums on a run, or even wear one of his shirts that I stole from his closet back home and brought to New York with me. Having this unique situation gives you unique opportunities, and so I'm going to take advantage of it. I find it comfortable. I don't find it uncomfortable for me to be doing these things. And I also think, notably and unique to my situation, one of my best friends in college, his father took his own life in 2018. And we were friends before, but not super close. But from thereafter, we just created this extremely strong bond. And while it was difficult in a sense for me personally to relive that tragedy very slightly through my friend, we found that we were in it together. And one of the ways that we could connect to both of our loved ones and really support each other at the time was we tried to make a difference ourselves. We ended up founding this small social enterprise called Shed Some Light, where we would make candles from recycled beer bottles left behind at OSU tailgates and sell them to the Ohio State student faculty and staff to raise money for the Brandon Behavioral Research Foundation and Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So that was another thing that really helped me feel connected to my dad. And I've still got some candles laying around here and there, but unfortunately I've got a bigger, more time committing job that prevents me from making candles. But that was definitely another way to stay connected to my dad.
Well, how creative, how creative. As we're talking, and you mentioned your friend, that's so poignant to me. What advice would you give to a young person who is in a similar situation as you and your college friend?
Yeah. Yeah. First and foremost, and this can take all the time, you know, that if you're creating a plan, take all the time you need for this one. And that's reflect and understand that what happened wasn't your fault. And, you know, that's the one thing to do with grief is you got to separate grief and guilt, because one burns clean fuel and one burns bad fuel, which is sort of the way that one of my coaches now talked to me about it. There's no silver bullet on dealing with depression. You know, my dad isn't coming back, and while it took some time growing up, and it's still sometimes difficult to tell folks about how he went, you know, I'm still here and growing and learning every day, but that would not have been possible had I not taken the time early on. And in my specific situation, having my mom push me through and encourage me to do grief counseling and also my own therapy. And I very much also believe that the catalyst of growth is comfort. And for me, like, my journey supporting myself today wouldn't be as fulfilling if it didn't come with some challenges. And it's important that I'm not losing touch with being honest with myself and others. Am I really putting myself out there enough, or am I comfortable? And that's a question that really only you and I can answer for myself. And last thing, and sort of my PSA on mental health in general, is the easiest way to help the mental health crisis is just by being a good human being. Be nice, treat others how you want to be treated. I'm religious, so I try and live the golden rule of, you know, treat folks how you would like to be treated in return. But becoming the best version of yourself is going to make the world a better place. And it's important. It's your duty to help other people and be kind. There's no such thing as shame for being a good person and doing the right thing. And so always going to be one to encourage that. And yeah, there's no shame in seeking help and talking about these subjects openly as well.
That's great advice for anybody young and old, especially in today's environment. Just be nice, be a good human being, and you're absolutely right. You're very wise for 26.
I try. Thank you.
I'm sure your words will hit home with many. It is helpful to hear how you've maintained over the last 15 years your connection with your dad, I think, is so important. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, I'm happy to share. You know, if my philosophy is, if there's one person out there listening to this that felt like it helped, then this was worth it. And what I would say is, you know, my email is open. If you have any questions or feedback, please contact me. And also, you can search my name on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'd love to continue the conversation with folks if they'd be interested. You know, you're not alone. I'd love to help in any way.
We're going to turn to Alyssa now. It's just the nature of what we do here at Life Bank. We deal with so many sudden deaths in our work. What makes suicide loss unique?
So there are a handful of things that make suicide loss unique, and I want to make sure I get to that. I also do, though, want to acknowledge that if anyone listening, they are struggling with their own mental health or have concerns about suicide, that you simply have to dial 988. And when you call that number, there's a trained counselor on the other end who can address immediate needs and connect you with ongoing care. So again, if you are listening and this is resonating with you, Jack's story, please dial 988. And Jack is an example of the extraordinary privilege that I have in building long-term relationships with our family. And Jack, you're living proof that children can be loved through their grief. The uniqueness of grief after suicide is one that I address in seminars here. The first is that death feels avoidable in some way, different from a heart attack or a car accident. People believe that somehow there's something that they could have done and that it could have been avoided. And yet, I've never met anyone who told me they knew how to prevent the suicide of their loved one but didn't do anything. On the contrary, I experienced people who were either totally blindsided or spent years working through our broken mental health system to help their loved ones. The other aspect of this grief rests in guilt. People often feel guilt, going back to the idea that it could have been preventable. But also, people have a tendency, especially if their loved one struggled for quite some time, feel relief. One of the things families have said to me is they know there will never be a knock at the door, that phone call. They know that their loved one is no longer suffering, and sometimes they feel guilt about relief. Also unique to suicide grief is blame. There's a tendency to want to place blame after someone takes their life. When it's a child, often parents look to the other and think that one person could have done more than the other person. And then also tends to be blamed towards our mental health system and practitioners who do or do not prescribe appropriate medication. In addition, there can also be feelings of stigma and isolation. People are often reluctant to talk about this. Jack mentioned that. And while Jack sought help to figure out how to do it, a lot of people don't. The Stranero family was very clear up front that they were not going to hide and that they wanted people to know that this is what happened. It goes back to the idea, unfortunately, that often survivors of suicide don't feel that their grief gets acknowledged in the same way as others, and so they tend to feel isolated. And then often there's fear and anxiety. Primarily, people are afraid and are concerned for the mental well-being of the remaining family members. And so they're concerned that will they have a similar lived experience? Will they struggle with depression and one day have suicidal thoughts? And that anxiety can be consuming if not addressed. And then, as Jack also mentioned, there's often a search for answers to understand why. And people are pretty consistently trying to construct a meaningful narrative they can live with. And while there are many answers that I may have, the one that I do actually know the answer to is why. And when I say that, it's because there is no answer. And truth be told, if you asked the person who took their lives why, they too would struggle with an answer. And usually when people decide they may have an answer, it leads to very distressing conclusions. So the energy that it takes to ruminate in the whys, I encourage people often to really change that question to what now, because there will not be an answer to why. And then finally, often there's family conflict. You know, our families can be a source of comfort, but sometimes they can be complicated. And often families aren't on the same page when it comes to how to talk about suicide. And that can create challenges within the family, leaving people like they're carrying a secret, which is an enormous burden to carry. So if you're really interested in finding various ways to not be isolated, to be part of a community, to feel understood and heard, I want you to keep your eye out for our brochure, which will be out in December, listing all the various ways that we encourage people to come here and to be a part of our supportive community in traditional ways via counseling and support groups, and in very creative ways that we're going to be doing it next year through music, through art, through dance, through finding ways to give back to the community. And again, Jack, I just want to thank you. It is my complete honor and privilege to know you and to have witnessed your growth over the years.
Likewise.
Alyssa, before we wrap this up, I was wondering if you had any tips for survivors of suicide loss, something to help them get through such a difficult time.
I think it's incredibly important to be able to have at least one person that you can talk to. It does not have to be a professional. It just has to be one person you can be authentically yourself with. In addition, to understand, as Jack said, that it is not your fault. When people take their own lives, they don't do it because of something someone did or someone said. In fact, I think the most profound example of why or how this happens was actually given to Jack's mom, Deb. There was a local rabbi who said to Deb that what John experienced is like the equivalent of an emotional aneurysm. That in that moment, this happened like a snap. And so for survivors, I just want you to remember that you're not alone, that it is not your fault, and to be able to talk about your experience so you are not isolated. And do not hide behind shame, because behind that shame is where your grief will go and not come out again, and that's not how we heal. So the only way out of this is to walk through, and there's no shame in how your loved one died.
Jack and Alyssa, I profoundly thank you both for talking about a sensitive subject, but something that needs to be discussed and people need to be aware of. Alyssa, what is that number again, in case somebody would like to reach out and talk?
Absolutely. So if you are or your loved ones are struggling at all, please dial 988. And that number on the other end will be trained counselors, and they can address your immediate needs and then connect you with ongoing care. And of course, you can reach out to LifeBank if you or your loved one is a donor family member, and we also can help you here.
Our general email is info@lifebanc.org. Again, thank you both for being with me today, and I appreciate your honesty and really educating our listeners. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Alyssa.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk About Life. If you have questions about today's podcast, reach out to us at info@lifebank.org. Take a few minutes to do something heroic and register to be an organ donor by saying yes at lifebank.org. Literally, someone's life is depending on it.